Slavery is back.
Welcome to a place where private business profit from a captive labour force, yet pennies are spent on medical services to a population in which the Indigenous, the poor and the mentally ill are overrepresented. Where isolation, humiliation and degradation are facts of life. Welcome to prison.
It depends who's telling the story, I suppose. The prisoners would have one view. The people who work in the prison system would have another. And I think it's up to people to decide where the truth is.
Give government propaganda and the media spin doctors the flick. And check out Doin' Time for news, views and tunes on prison issues from Guantanamo Bay to Christmas Island to prisons and detention centres everywhere. Every Monday at 4 p.m. on your community radio, 3CR.
We are still fired up and we're still talking about revolution.
Hello and welcome to the Doin' Time show, except that this show is going to be very different and we're going to be actually honouring the International Day of People with Disability, which happens each year on the 3rd of December, which is today. 3CR celebrates International Day of People with Disability, and it gives people with disabilities a chance to express on the issues that matter to us. And I'll say us because I also have a vision impairment, so I won't say them. And to look at the right to access, education, empowerment, pride, to creativity and expression, to freedom from discrimination and violence. So the Doin' Time show is honouring the day, and it's 12 hours of broadcast. And thank you to Brainwave also that broadcasted previously. Today on the show, I will be interviewing Will McCrosty, Director of Description Victoria, about the importance of audio description for blind and vision impaired theatre goers. Will and I will critique a theatre production that I attended, focusing exclusively on the audio description. And after that, Will and I have discussed off-air, and he will be staying with me for the show, so you'll be hearing his voice throughout as well. I will also interview Ricky Chaplin, blind advocate and advocacy officer at Blind Citizens Australia, about complaints and about the Victorian Equal Opportunity Act, and looking at how you actually make a complaint to the Equal Opportunity Commission, the Victorian Equal Opportunity Commission, I should say, how to lodge them, the sorts of issues that come up, what the criteria is, conciliation process, and looking at perhaps some brief case studies of blind and vision impaired people and what's happened. So basically this show is focusing on the lived experience of vision impairment. And I wanted to welcome Will to the show. Welcome, Will.
Thank you very much. It's lovely to be here.
You too. It's good to have you. Now, I'm wondering if we could start off by you talking about the organisation, mm-hmm. and talk about that little bit of background.
Sure. Description Victoria, as of just a few weeks ago, is a not-for-profit incorporated association dedicated to creating accessible and inclusive arts experiences for people who are blind or have low vision. So we kind of think of ourselves as having a slightly broader remit than just audio description sometimes, even though it's right there in the name. I guess to define audio description for the listeners, it's a practice whereby a describer, is what we call ourselves, will set about to interpret the visual elements of a particular artwork, whether that is a film, whether that is a piece of theatre, whether that is an exhibition or a single visual artwork. We'll try and create a verbal description of the visual elements of that, the goal being creating access for people who are blind or have low vision. And I guess the important thing to note in there is that the focus is very much on the visual. So we have a kind of set of guidelines and rules to our practice, which try to steer us away from making too many interpretations on behalf of the audience, because we really believe that people who are blind deserve to come to their own conclusions about what artworks mean. And so we try and give very strictly visual information, fit that in with the rest of the artwork, and let people come to their own unique understanding of it like everybody else.
And obviously these describers would be cited.
Yes.
Obviously they wouldn't be able to describe it otherwise.
For the most part, yes. We do.
Well, we could, yeah.
Give it a go.
But the visuals, you couldn't.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I guess it, we have some parallels with Auslan Sign Language interpreters in that regard, working with people who are completely deaf and have no experience of hearing. There is a level of trust, and there is an ethical component to the work which comes from that sense, and we have a responsibility because people are relying on us for that access to make sure that we do our jobs well.
That's fantastic, Will, and thanks so much for that introduction. So should we then enlighten the listeners or the audience, whatever terminology, mm-hmm. As to the process? I mean, for example, I attended Snow White, mm-hmm. which I want to make it clear that I don't believe it was just a children's production. I think it was also for adults.
Oh, no, that was a very adults production.
Quite dark.
A little bit sexy, yeah.
Very sexy. And it was very interesting because for me personally, as a blind person, what I found intriguing is the way that you were so practical about this situation, Will. You sent pre-show notes. Mm-hmm. For example, about a description of the set, the characters, mm-hmm. and the costumes. And that really helped me because I was able to get a sense of what things look like.
Mm.
And so did you actually write those notes yourself?
I wrote those notes myself, yep. So in terms of process, that was a show that came to Melbourne by a company called Ballet Projecage. That particular production has been touring the world for a number of years, which actually makes my job a lot easier because there was some good video recordings available beforehand. And it means the show's really settled, because the worst thing is when I'm working on a new show and I go in for the preview to try and see what I'm meant to be describing, and then I come back a week later to actually do it and the whole show's changed. And suddenly I'm sitting there with a script that's now completely out of date. So, yes, for Snow White, I got a copy of a video, got a run sheet, and I went to see one of the first performances. It only ran for about 5 days, which is pretty challenging, so I went to see the very first performance and then went away with the script, with the video, and with the notes on detail that I'd made in that viewing, and wrote a second script, basically, a description script that I then came back and tested the night before. Set up all my equipment, ready to have you there, and also wrote those pre-show notes. So when you arrived, you'd received those pre-show notes in advance so that you could listen at home and orient yourself with the stage, something we would normally do, but we weren't able to do for this specific show just because of timing constraints. Sure. Would be a tactile tour of the stage as well. That said, for a ballet, a lot of tarquette and a lot of backdrop, not a lot of propage going on in a ballet. So we weren't able to do that, unfortunately. But what we aim to do is to try and give people a variety of ways in which they can engage with the work. So some people might have some vision and might prefer to not actually use the description through the show. For them, just the tactile tour and the pre-show notes might be adequate for their experience. Whereas some people might be a little disorganized and not read their pre-show notes and come in and just use the description. So we try and give as many different options and try to cater to as wide a variety of experiences as we possibly can.
Yeah, and Snow White was actually quite a passionate type of ballet, wasn't it?
Mm.
And it was really great the way the ballet moves were described.
Mm.
And I think what was tricky about that is that there were a lot of moves, weren't there?
Mm.
And with the poison apple,
mm-hmm.
Can you describe what we did with this apple?
Okay, so it's Snow White, right? You know, yeah, there's a very important plot point about a poisoned apple which makes Snow White fall asleep. And the way that moment between the evil stepmother, the evil queen, and Snow White is depicted in the show is a very, very rough kind of duet between Snow White and the evil queen. And the evil queen's got this kind of dominatrix vibe happening, and this corset and this long flowing dark brown hair and really harsh black eye makeup. And during this duet, she pulls an apple from her long sleeve and she basically crams it into Snow White's mouth and it gets stuck there. And then this queen drags Snow White by the apple, by the mouth, across the stage in this really quite ferocious duet. And I thought, it's going to be very challenging to describe that in the show, and it's going to take a lot of time. So I'm always kind of open and trying to be creative about ways to get the point across.
Yeah.
So before the show, I found you in the foyer and I had in my bag an apple.
A real apple.
An honest-to-God apple. And I bit into that apple with a very wide jaw myself, and I got you to grab the other end of that apple and, as gently as possible, kind of yank my head around a little bit. And I'm happy to say I only had to go to the chiropractor twice, but I'm all fixed.
Not three times?
Not three times.
Oh, no.
No.
But I thought that was just great, the way that was handled, because when the actual scene came up about the apple, I was able to visualize that in my head.
Mm.
And I think that discussing a ballet and discussing audio description is so important, because often what tends to happen with disability activists, with prison activists, with people that are struggling every day to educate others, we often forget to enjoy ourselves.
Mm.
And I really felt that today was really important to be able to say, look, I just want to make this show a little bit lighter, at least with the first interview, you know, to discuss that. And some people might say, oh, yeah, but, you know, you're adhering to capitalist society and, you know, what are you going to the theatre for? But it's not really about that. It's more about the fact that you've got to be able to enjoy yourselves and give to yourself. Otherwise, how on earth are you going to carry on with the struggle?
Absolutely.
It's approximately 4:12 and you're listening to a broadcast of the Doin' Time show, but with a special broadcast in regards to International Disability Day, and we're working with Will at the moment. So, yeah, just to continue with that, so what I found really engaging as well in the material and the whole ballet, is where you said, other locales in the story include a forest grove populated by mischievous nymphs who are barely clothed in wraps of muslin. The caves dominated by a towering rock wall and home to seven friendly miners. So that was pretty amazing that you discussed all that. But what was more amazing actually is the way that the ballet portrayed the dwarves as miners.
Mm. I really enjoyed that, and I thought it was such a tactful take on what has been a very unfortunate representation of short-statured people in the past.
Yeah.
So I'm glad they were able to come up with a way to do that. And it added a real, you know, we were saying before, it was quite a dark and sexy show, but they had this really playful energy to them. And interacting with Snow White, they had this beautifully playful way of working with her that was such a breath of fresh air. You know, you're in this dark world and there's this oppressive queen and we're all a bit afraid of her, but you know, you get a place to escape to, and hopefully, you know, the score, the beautiful score by Mahler, kind of becomes much more light and springy in that moment. I really enjoyed that as well.
And what other things would you describe for general theatre? What are things that are difficult, do you think?
Oh, things that are difficult.
Vision impaired people.
It sounds like a bit of a truism, but anything that you can't hear. So, yep. My first priority as a describer, because there's always more visual stuff happening than you can talk about. So, what my job is to kind of try and take as much information in as possible, and then prioritize it and figure out the best, most complete pathway through that will give my audience access to, first and foremost, the narrative.
Yep.
So you need to maintain that sense of presence. You need to actually feel like you're under the spell of the show, because that's why we go to theatre and ballet and opera, is to actually fall into another world, at least in my opinion.
Me too.
So if I'm not giving you information, you know, say there's two characters in the living room kind of nattering away and they're talking, and in the kitchen Jemima is reaching into the sideboard and pulling out a gun, and then suddenly there's a gunshot. You're going, oh my God, where did that gunshot come from? It's really startling. You don't know who's been shot. You don't know what's happening. So you need to know, I need to get it in there somewhere, the action that's actually happening, maybe it, that's not the focus auditorily at that particular moment. So those moments where there's kind of multiple focuses, multiple locations of action happening can be quite difficult for describers. And probably quite difficult for the audience. I'm sure you've had that experience in the past as well.
Absolutely. But in fact, I've actually been to see movies as well as theatre productions, and I actually went to see Mad Max.
Oh, yeah, the new one.
Yeah, down at Melbourne Central. And I actually went along with a couple of people, and I was thinking to myself, you know what, I don't think I'm going to get anything out of this, because it was an action-packed movie.
With very little dialogue.
Very little dialogue indeed. And I thought, you know what, I'm just going to go, I'll have dinner. And I won't worry. I'll just pretend that I'll just tell them that I enjoyed it, which I've done. I've done all my life. You know, I'll go to a movie and oh, yeah, it was great. You know, but because I felt that I couldn't say anything because I didn't want to upset other people's enjoyment. Because I mean, that's how it is. You know, like you've got to compromise and don't say anything. That's how I used to be.
Yeah.
Of course. But anyway, when I got there, it was amazing. Like the audio describers, and I honestly can't remember. You might want to Google it later what company it was from.
I have no idea.
But at the cinema, the audio description was wonderful. Like they went so fast.
Oh, yeah.
And there was no dialogue, but honestly, I actually felt like I could see throughout that movie. It was like, am I tripping? Like, is this real or what?
Yeah.
You know, and it was like they were talking about all the action. They talked about how they jumped on and off the trucks and how, you know, the dead bodies were coming out, you know, and all the shots and, you know, people on the road. And it was just amazing.
Yeah. And I think that movie had such a fantastically evocative soundscape to it as well, from memory.
Yeah.
You know, the sounds of the cars and the guitar guy standing on the top and to go back to what things are tricky, something that's very tricky is a show that has a ton of dialogue.
Yep, yeah.
If it's a kind of farce where people are just talking at a mile a minute and the scenes flow into one another without particular scene changes, one of the kind of guidelines around audio description is don't talk over the show.
Mm.
The show should kind of speak for itself as much as possible. So if people don't ever shut up, as a describer, you have no... you have no space. You kind of just have to work with what you have.
But it's a skill.
It is a skill.
It definitely is a skill, because you'd have to kind of wait until someone stopped talking and then put it in.
Yeah, and I guess that's part of the preparation process, is you get very good at knowing how quickly you can speak.
Absolutely.
And how much information, and you can come up with, you know, four different versions. There's like the very long version, the long version, the medium version, and the short version. And then you have to decide which version you actually can fit in the time that you have available. And if there's any other information you need to get into that gap. So you might want to do long, but you have to do medium because you need to get two mediums in.
Absolutely. Look, let's continue this discussion. I'm actually going to put on an announcement. Ricky's going to come in and on the phone and we'll talk about discrimination. But I think we might ask him actually what he thinks of audio description. I'm sure he's not going to mind that.
Sure.
And we'll talk further about it and about the act in relation to this, if there is one. So tune in. I'm just going to go into a quick announcement and hopefully we'll be able to line up. But thank you so much, Will, for all that.
No worries.
Really appreciate it.
I'm just the same as everybody else.
Disability Day on 3CR, 12 hours of community radio by, for and about people with disability.
You've got to remember, NAIDOC's a special day for us, fellas. As a reminder, who we are.
Every year for NAIDOC Week, 3CR Community Radio gives voice to our Indigenous brothers and sisters through Beyond the Bars, Australia's only live prison broadcast. I am-
man, a black, black man.
NAIDOC means a lot to me. It's about identity and also about past and present.
NAIDOC means a lot to me for my family and my people.
And the people forgetting about our rights.
You can access audio from current and past Beyond the Bars broadcasts via the 3CR website. Go to 3cr.org.au/beyondthebars and either listen to or download audio from Australia's only live prison broadcast.
Happy NAIDOC!
And you're back with the International Day of Disability, which is a special broadcast of the Doin' Time Show. And we're going to be speaking now with Ricky Chaplin. Hello, Ricky.
Hey, Marissa. How you doing?
Great. Welcome to the program. How are you?
Yeah, good.
Now, joining me in the studio, just to let you know, I'm not sure if you were briefed beforehand, we've got Will from Description Victoria.
Yep.
And
hi, how are you doing, Will?
Good, thank you.
Yeah, it's lovely to have you both here. And I invited Will in to talk about audio description. You and I will still continue, obviously, with our interview.
Sure.
But I wanted to, after we just do a bit of interviewing here, just to talk a little bit about audio description and maybe in terms of not just the vision impairment but with any other disabilities that you have. Is that okay, Ricky?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Okay, so I introduced you earlier on as the advocacy officer of Blind Citizens Australia and also as a blind advocate as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if you could just give us a little bit of information starting off just by talking about the complaint system and the process and what happens, like how do you actually put a complaint through to the Victorian Equal Opportunity Commission for a blind and vision impaired person?
Yeah, sure. Okay, so commonly what happens is that people contact us at BCA with the issue that they wish to raise as an advocacy officer, I advise them on a course of action. And if it's an issue that is obvious discrimination, then one of the options that we look at is going to the Victorian Human Rights and Equal Opportunity Commission. Always in the first instance, we attempt to approach the company, the organisation, the agency involved. If we don't get a satisfactory result from that, then that's when we tend to go to the Victorian Human Rights and Equal Opportunity Commission. And just to say also that you don't have to approach BCA to do that, but my role is to provide assistance and to formulate the complaint, which we can either lodge online, we can do it by post, or we can even do it over the phone. What I tend to do is use the support letter that I would write in the first instance to the company as the basis of the complaint. It is submitted, and then there's a coordinator at the Human Rights Commission who then assigns it to a case manager. And that can take some time. It can take 4 or 5 weeks to get that to happen. But once that happens, the case manager, who is usually also a conciliator, contacts both parties and establishes whether the party against which the complaint has been lodged is willing to participate in mediation. Once that's established, and assuming that both parties are willing to participate in mediation, that conciliation is then organised, so it can be done face-to-face or via phone. I tend to encourage people to do it face-to-face because then, you can just get a real feel for how people are behaving with things like body language, expression, tone of voice, etc. It can be done by teleconference. It's not a problem to do that. So the conciliation is not... it doesn't bind the parties to a legal outcome. So the commission doesn't tell the parties how to resolve a complaint. The aim of the mediation is for both parties to have a facilitated conversation about the issues. So the mediator divides the situation, I guess, into various issues, and we talk about those systematically. It's a way of keeping the conversation on track, and it ensures that all of the issues that are of concern are addressed. Once we reach the end of that process, the face-to-face process, there can be a bit of, back and forth in terms of a bit of bargaining, if you like, a bit of negotiating on what outcomes are going to be satisfactory, and each party agrees on those, and the actions that will take place following that. So that's basically the process in a nutshell.
Fantastic. And just to also clarify to listeners, because there will be listeners here that have a range of disabilities, not just blindness and vision impairment, I have chosen to run this broadcast specifically with blindness and vision impairment, but that would apply to all disabilities across the board, obviously, Ricky.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. And then, even things like sexual harassment, for example, racial discrimination, the Human Rights Commission handles all those sorts of issues as well.
Fantastic. Well, it's not fantastic, but it's fantastic it's handled.
Yes.
But, I can't speak too much on air about my experiences because I was actually forced into signing a confidentiality agreement as part of the settlement. But I can say, generally speaking, that I have taken two organisations to the Equal Opportunity Board, and it was in regards to discrimination against me as a blind person because they didn't want to employ me on the basis of my vision impairment. And we didn't go to court. We had a conciliation conference. But believe me, I was verbally abused a lot during that conciliation process, and I was treated abominably. But I also felt very empowered and very satisfied by the end of it. We can't take our money with us to the cemetery, and it's not about money for me. It's about principle.
Absolutely. And, I was just before you rang, I was reading on Facebook about an experience that somebody had. They wanted to participate in a research project, and it was about tasting food. And so this research company, once the person turned up to where the project was being held, she didn't disclose her disability because she didn't think it was necessary.
Sure.
It was a taste testing thing. And
you don't have to see to do that, do you?
Yeah.
Unless you put your food in your eye.
Yeah. the ludicrous thing was that they said, oh, you should have told us because this is about taste testing with your eyes as well.
You're not serious.
I'm serious.
What, to put it in your eye?
I don't know. No, I'm referring to looking at the food. But oh my goodness!
I was being a smarter.
No, I know that.
So you mean looking at the food? Really? Well, I suppose visual presentation is important, mm-hmm. isn't it? But that's discrimination, don't you think?
Absolutely. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Because. even to use one sense, to focus on one sense, it's not indicative of the way that people live and the way they experience life. So
That's
it kind of invalidates the research in any way, if you think about it.
What I find really scary, Ricky, here and Will, is that, whenever I apply for a job, whether that be volunteer, whether that be paid employment, you don't always have your needs met in every job that you have. People will say to you, we don't have the money, we can't do this for you. So it's really about making do. And sometimes I feel like I'm living in the 18th century. And it's 2018, Oh, I'm sorry, we don't have the money to pay for this technology. Oh, no, we can't do this for you. No, we can't do that. And you've got to choose your battles.
That's true as well. It's important to know what resources are available and whether it means enough to you to want to be able to pursue it.
Exactly.
There are so many instances of discrimination in society when we think about it, but, we could spend all of our time focusing on these things. But it's exhausting.
It is. It's really exhausting.
Yeah, and so you're right. We do have to pick what's really important, but at the same time, It's so important that we do address matters of discrimination where it's going to affect lots of people, I think. And, you know, it's not something that's going to go away. It's also a process of education when we do this.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's frustrating to have to do it, to constantly educate people, but unless we do it, it's not likely that things are going to change of their own accord.
It's true, Ricky. And in fact, you know, one of the things is that it is exhausting, isn't it? It's very exhausting. And I will say here also that 3CR is having a fundraiser for wine. So it may be that after people do their conciliation, they might want to go and get a couple of bottles of wine.
Yep, that might be a really good idea, I think.
And, you know, drown your sorrows or celebrate, depending on the outcome of the conciliation. They
exactly
can get
right.
their wine and the money will go to a good organisation.
That's right. Good idea. Very, very clever advertisement.
Ricky, I'm wondering if you could briefly talk about a few concrete examples. What would be an example of an employment issue that would need to go to, and then we'll talk a little bit about audio description.
Yeah, sure. So there's a couple of cases that I'm dealing with regarding employment at the moment. One was that a young girl who wanted to work for a supermarket chain, you know, as most teenagers do, she went to her local store and initially was told, even though that she had disclosed that she had a vision impairment, they said yes. We'll give you a job. Then it was discovered that she couldn't read the cash registers, and so they reneged on that without even getting an external assessment of any sort done. So we've written several support letters to the organisation, to the company concerned, and we weren't getting anywhere. So we then took it to the Equal Opportunity Commission in Victoria. And we actually had a really successful conciliation. The company, in the time that it took for the conciliation to occur, had realised that, hey, look, we reacted too hastily. We haven't done the right thing here. And now we're at the stage where we're trying to get an assessment organised. Unfortunately, Job Access will not do that assessment unless the girl is actually employed, which I was very disappointed.
That is disappointing. Mm. Why not?
Yeah. Yeah, well, they say that you've got to have a contract of at least 8 hours a week. Now, this is a casual position, so the hours vary. And, you know, it's just not possible for them to give that kind of guarantee. And rightfully so, they want to know that if this person's going to be employed, that they can actually fulfil the duties of the role.
So she lost the case?
So she hasn't... It's not so much that she's lost the case, it's that... we now have to source an assessment before she commences work because that was what the agreement was of the conciliation. She was happy to do that. We just wanted the assessment to take place. But now it's made more difficult by the fact that we've got to find someone to do the assessment. And we're in negotiations with Vision Australia at the moment. But, yeah, you know, it's disappointing at times when, you know, an agency that you would think would help in this situation doesn't because of, you know, I guess the legislation prevents them from doing it or they're quite rigid in what they will do. But I think this is a key issue that we should raise with Job Access at a systemic level. They should be doing these sorts of access, you know, accessibility assessments prior to people getting jobs so that you don't get set up for disappointment or difficulty further down the track.
You know, it's very true. And look, this never got to conciliation, but I actually had an experience, and I won't name the actual organisation, but
yep.
But it wasn't in Victoria. It was in Australia.
Yep.
I actually applied for a volunteer job working with people experiencing AIDS, and
yep.
these people would have been very ill and... they were very ill, and they said, no, you can't. You're not coming because you're blind and you can't, you'll drop them. And they said, they're very ill and you're going to be able to drop, you'll drop them. I don't think you're capable. I think you'd be very clumsy. So I went to management and at that time I was actually in tears because I thought, you know what, here it is. I'm really wanting to help out. Mm-hmm. It's a volunteer role, and they're telling me that I can't do that. In the end, they were really good to me, and we were able to negotiate. I actually had to leave the state in the end, so I couldn't go through with it. But I think that was really good that I was able to educate people about that. So,
absolutely, But, and, you know, it's really sad when you get instances where people aren't even allowed to prove themselves. I can think of another case I'm working on at the moment where this person approached a major bank, which was advertising positions, and he was told flat out, "I'm sorry, we're not taking applications from blind candidates at the moment." So he wasn't even allowed to begin the application process, the interview process.
Oh,
my God. So, yeah, that one is going straight to the commission.
Mm. they just hung himself. He gave himself away. Because you've got your direct discrimination and then you've got your indirect discrimination.
That's right.
And interestingly, you know, when I've applied for jobs – and I've worked in quite a few jobs. I haven't worked in blindness affairs. It's just not an interest of mine. But I've always worked in jobs where, you know, where it's considered to be dangerous for a blind person, like, for example, juvenile justice, working in a prison, child protection. And it's always been, but how are you going to cope? And I think what's important is that, you know, you report all these cases and, you know, people going into the commission, but there are a lot of instances where I haven't reported it.
You know, it's understandable. I think, you know, it's surprising, particularly, it's usually not from the client that we experience discrimination. It's always from management, and it's always about risk management, you know, and all of this stuff that, you know, they're concerned about covering their own backside, so to speak. Whereas, you know, I've worked in social work positions where I've done counselling, case management.
Yeah.
I've been to people's homes on my own, and people have been extremely accommodating and, you know, very happy that I'm a person out there with a disability. I can, you know, demonstrate genuine empathy because I have that lived experience, and people appreciate that. You know, so... I've had good and bad managers, but, you know, this is the kind of stuff that management, you know, in these sorts of situations don't tend to consider. And this is, you know, why we're always having to prove to them that, yes, we are capable of doing these things, but, yes, there are ways of managing the risks and that we do take responsibility. We know what can occur and we've got strategies to deal with it.
But, Ricky, I'm just wondering how you would actually maintain eye contact with those people. Wouldn't it be difficult?
Good on you.
But wouldn't it be, Ricky? I mean, wouldn't you just get so fatigued?
Yeah. Well, I've got to maintain ear contact, and that's fatiguing.
Ear contact. That's another one.
Yeah.
But, Ricky, you see, I like to use humour because it's so important to use humour, isn't it?
That's right.
Yep. We should go and do a comedy strip.
Yes, I know. Yeah, that sounds like a good idea.
Down at Northcote, you know, the Northcote Town Hall, we should set it up.
Yep, absolutely. Yep.
Ricky, it's so lovely to have you, and I'm wondering now if, are you okay? Have you been put off? No?
No. it was unexpected, but that's okay.
Nah, it's all good. I mean, we know each other, don't we, Ricky?
Absolutely. Yeah, no,
but Ricky, I was wondering if you and you wanted to talk to Will now and alert listeners, just talk about your audio description experiences. But before we do that, Will and Ricky, what's the act about that? Can you actually go to the Equal Opportunity Board about that?
It has been done. We would encourage people to do it, and we've said for a long time that, you know, we would support a number of people to do that. And, you know, the best way to get attention around these sorts of issues is in numbers. If we could demonstrate that as many people as possible could benefit from this, then, you know, obviously the powers that be are going to take us more seriously. And absolutely, you're right in having brought Will in and that, you know, if we collaborate between groups of people with disabilities who have different needs for audio description and benefit in different ways, then, you know, that's fantastic that we can collaborate in that way.
So it can happen then? Like, is it illegal not to do it?
For a theatre
or a cinema not to do that?
Is it illegal not to provide audio description?
Yeah.
No, it's not illegal. That's the problem.
Right.
There is no legislation around that. There's legislation around captioning, but there's not.
In the Broadcast Services Act,
So you've got a hearing impairment as well?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, so So how would that work? So you would... But what happens if you can't hear or see?
My hearing impairment's such that I can, you know, I can follow something fairly well. I use headphones for a lot of things, including this interview right now.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So I can follow a movie with audio description. In cinemas, that situation varies a bit because you get some cinemas that have a hearing loop built in and the audio description comes through on a separate headset. So I have used been in situations where I've used the telecoil to listen to the movie itself, and I've used the headset, which some headphones are telecoil compatible as well. Mm. I've sort of had to use two different sources to get the audio description. There are situations, though, where you've got to choose between whether you want to watch the movie or whether you want to listen to the audio description.
Mm.
Unfortunately, that's often the case with theatre more so than movies. But that can get a little bit tricky. But in terms of Netflix is a good example. There's lots of movies with audio description on Netflix, and I use that and stream it through my phone. Can listen, you know, the audio description track is integrated into the movie. So, you know, it just sits in the gaps where there's no dialogue sort of thing. So that's really good. That works very well. But audio description in public places is a little bit more challenging, but, it's a lot of people benefit from it. And, you know, I'd certainly, we're not going to be able to cover every situation. A person who's blind and deaf, I think, there is technology around, come to think about it, where I think it's still at the experimental stage, but they're actually looking at syncing captions to your iPhone so that if you've got your Braille display paired to your iPhone, the captions will come through on the Braille display. That would be very cool. I haven't actually tried it, but it sounds like a great idea. I look forward to the advent of that when it comes out.
What are your thoughts on it, Will, about the discrimination and all that type of stuff?
The lack of the legislative framework is really difficult, and it's something that I struggle with constantly because Australia is the only English-speaking country that lacks any kind of legislation or policy with regard to audio description on television. Correct me if I'm wrong, Ricky, at any point, of course. And what that means is that the awareness in the community at large, and even the awareness within the blind community sometimes, of audio description is low to non-existent. So the work at the moment is still so much about educating people that it even exists, let alone educating people or motivating people to campaign for it to be included. In my work as a describer day-to-day in theatre and art and in galleries, I constantly, almost daily, talk to people who have never heard of what I do before. So it's really challenging to kind of start a mass movement to support something that people don't even know about. And the big reason for that, in my view, is that lack of a legislative framework on something that is as accessible and ubiquitous as television. The other issue for me is around something that you touched on before, Marissa, in your experience at the movies, which is that sometimes it's not, you don't have a very good experience with audio description, even when you do get it. But it's less effort to just smile and nod than it is to actually sit down and critique it, give feedback, go through that whole rigmarole when you might be met with the kind of indignant, sighted person
just
who just
pretend.
Goes, "But we gave it to you. Like, what do you want?"
Yeah.
Because there is no real critical framework around quality in audio description in Australia.
No, there's not.
And there's also there's and that goes for the community, that goes for the arts industry, and so it means that it also means that when you don't have a sense that there is an alternative, you know, if there's no way for this to be better, then what's the point of me arcing up about it? So there's kind of twin kind of very active things around the legislative front and cultural things that are working in combination to really hold back this practice in Australia, I think, at the moment.
I'm hoping that that can greatly be improved. Yeah.
We're working on it. one person at a time.
Yeah, it'll be fine.
Yeah.
I
can't comment too much about it, but I can say that BCA has got a very exciting development in terms of promotion of audio description and education coming up very shortly, so there'll be a lot of publicity around that.
Fabulous.
What's the website for Blind Citizens Australia, Ricky?
The website is www.bca.org.au.
Now, Ricky, I just wanted, just going back to the subject of you doing social work, I just wanted to let you know that that your the way you told it was, I really respected that. And just to give you a little bit of an analysis as to those comments that I made about eye contact and fatigue,
yes.
Those things were actually said to me.
Wow.
By a tutor in social work, and yep. who thought that I wouldn't be able to maintain eye contact and that my blindness would actually make me very, very tired. And I don't know why, but I keep laughing at it. Because it's always good to laugh about these things, and it's so good to be able to just, you've got to laugh about it. Otherwise, you go crazy,
right.
You know?
Yeah, and so, you'll laugh at this one. It's not quite social work related, but I got into a taxi one day, and this guy says to me, totally out of the blue, he says, "How do you live in all that darkness?" I couldn't believe it. Yeah.
But it's not dark.
I know. That's just it. But people don't understand that. It's like if you cut my eyes out, I wouldn't know the difference. You know?
I mean, although I can see light.
Yeah, I can't see that. But
you're not in darkness.
I mean, nothing. Yeah, that's right.
The darkness.
I just imagined that you were just dressed really goth, and that's why he asked you that.
Hey, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's actually interesting also with mobility. And, Ricky, I've seen some of your postings on the VIPL list about mobility issues and how people react to you. And I remember once I was walking down the street and I was using my cane, because when I'm by myself I use my cane.
Yep.
And there was a man who walked straight in front of me, and I didn't realise it at the time. My mobility instructor was behind me. And my cane got stuck between this guy's legs.
Oh, no.
But I didn't know, and I was pulling at this cane thinking, what's happened here? It's stuck. And the cane stuck, and I was thinking, what happened? And my instructor, like, she was cracking up laughing. And then he said to me, do you want to sit down? And then the cane was released, and when he walked off, she said to me, oh, Marissa, do you know what happened here? Because I didn't know. Like,
because
he didn't say, I think he was petrified.
Hmm.
It was crazy.
Yeah, well, I've had a big issue that we're facing as pedestrians at the moment is people looking at their phones. I bent four canes totally out of shape within a 12-month period in Melbourne just from people walking along, not looking, probably looking at their phones. It's so frustrating because once a cane gets out of shape, that's it. If you don't have a backup,
that's right.
It's not safe to walk without one.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's not safe. It's quite scary, isn't it? I mean, especially if you leave your cane at work.
Yeah.
And you think, oh, my God, how am I going to get there? My friend rode his bike to my workplace and actually got my cane for me, which was really good.
Yep.
It's approximately 4:48 and you're listening to a special broadcast celebrating International Disability Day. So are there any other comments, Ricky, that you wanted to make about the Equal Opportunity Commission and making complaints?
I think just to say that you don't have to be alone in going through that process. That and also that, you know, in Australia we've tended over the years to have a culture of, oh, you don't complain about something, that's whinging. Mm-hmm. Well, because of the way that the legislation works, it's actually... as unfair as it is, The onus is on us to prove that we are being discriminated against by organisations, companies, etc. So it's actually very necessary to lodge these complaints, because it's the only way that discrimination matters can be addressed. And you can't just go to court. You have to go through these processes. And often, you know, they end up with reasonable sorts of outcomes. There is one major one that didn't, unfortunately, and that's with the Commonwealth Bank. We went to the Australian Human Rights Commission with that and conciliated and didn't reach a satisfactory outcome. So the possibility of taking that to court is being explored at the moment. But, yeah, because the legislation supports companies rather than individuals, that's why it's so important for us to use this complaints framework, because, you know, it's the only way that we're going to demonstrate to these companies that, hey, we're serious and we're not going to go away.
Absolutely. And, you know, that in response to that, I'd like to make a comment in that not all complaints go to the Equal Opportunity Commission. Sometimes we actually don't report it. And during the, like, a normal day in the life of a blind or vision impaired person, you know, you can't go into a bookshop and read a book. There's not a lot of accessible voting out there. I mean, it is stolen land that you're voting on anyway. I thought I'd put that in, but apart from that, there's not a lot of accessible voting. There's so many different areas. You know, even if you ring an insurance company to get a home and contents policy, you know, I told someone the other day, I said, you know what, this is illegal under the Act. You should be providing, you know, information in an accessible format.
Even getting documents in accessible format from government departments, the NDIS is notoriously bad at it. All sorts of things. Yeah, you mentioned insurance. Well, I had to lodge a travel insurance claim just recently. And even with, you know, developing my service agreements and that with the NDIS, with service providers, the amount of documents that have been sent to me, I've had to sign it and whatever. Had I not had my parents here, then I could go, okay, can I get you to print this out? I'll sign it and then scan it back in and send it back to me so I can send it to them. I don't know how I would have done it, you know, without that extra help around. And yet it should be able to be done. We do it all the time at BCA. We provide everything in Word, or we just get verbal consent and we record that.
But it shouldn't be like that.
Mm.
Yeah, it's very, very easy to do, you know? Had I addressed every instance of that occurring, it would have just worn me out. I do advocacy for a living. I don't need to be doing it in my personal life as well, you know, unless it's something really important. Had I been on my own, I would have had to, of course. Thankfully, I had family here and I can get some help with that kind of stuff. But, yeah, you know, people just don't think of stuff unless they're in that situation. And so that's why there is this constant process of education.
Absolutely.
Can I ask, Ricky, would you be supportive of a change towards a legislative framework that was more standards-based for accessibility rather than complaints-based?
If we look at the standards-based legislation, if we look at the transport accessible transport standards, for example, they've been in place since 2002. The education standards, they've been in place for a long time as well. The problem with them is that they're not enforceable. So the legislation has to go further than just providing standards. It's got to say, if you don't comply with these standards, there will be consequences. That's the problem. There are no consequences, and that's essentially what we said. The transport accessibility standards have just been reviewed, and that's what we said, is that they're useless because they can't be enforced, and people are very apathetic.
Absolutely. It's approximately 4:53, and we're nearing the end of our show. Ricky, I wanted to thank you for coming on, and it's been great to have you.
Oh, thanks very much, Marissa. It's always fun to have a chat with you. And, thanks for the unexpected humour as well.
Awesome. All right, Rick. Ricky, keep up the good work.
Thanks very much.
Thanks so much.
Okay.
Bye-bye. And that was Ricky Chaplin and joining us as well as Will as well, speaking to us about audio description and looking at the Equal Opportunity Commission, how you lodge a complaint. And Ricky Chaplin is from the Blind Citizens Australia, and he's the advocacy officer there. So, Will, before we finish, we've got a couple of minutes left. Mm-hmm. Just wondering if you wanted to just let any listeners know if they want to get something audio described, how would they do it and how can you be contacted?
Yeah, sure. So we work in pretty much all cultural settings at the moment, and we're also exploring some interesting one-to-one support options for big events that might not necessarily be cultural in nature. So descriptionvictoria.com.au is the website with some examples of what we do, contact details, information about our process. So I would absolutely welcome contacts from anybody who might be interested. I will say, though, if you work maybe in film or moving image, that's not an area that we do so much. I can definitely refer you on to some service providers who work in that space elsewhere in Australia, equally as important and valuable.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining me today.
No worries.
It's been very interesting, hasn't it?
It has. It's good. I'm always evangelizing. I'm always talking about audio description because, like I said, people don't know about it. And I think it's just one of the most interesting practices, and I really like it. So the more people that come along for this particular journey and are willing to advocate for people, if you've got your Netflix, go put on any Netflix original series and turn on the descriptive audio track and have a listen and see what you think. And you might be able to have a taste of it.
Did you do that one?
No, I don't. So I haven't done really any of the big major screen-based. But Netflix are quite amazing, actually. They've committed to audio describing all of their original content, which was a result of a campaign. They did Daredevil, which is a series about a blind superhero from the Marvel Universe. And there was a campaign by a blind man in America to get audio description on that. And as a result, Netflix has now made sure every single thing that they produce on their platform has audio description. So there's lots of examples out there.
Well, thank you so much. And so we're just about to go to the next broadcast, which is called Are You Looking at Me? And that's Words from the Wise. It's presented by Liz Wright, and it's about the first wave of disability activists from the 60s, protest legislation and establishments of organisations led by people with disability. So stay tuned to listen to that. And I thought it would be a nice touch for the end of the show to go out with our usual theme song that Doin' Time has, which is Black Fella, White Fella by the Rumpy Band.
Hmm.
And that's really to honour Aboriginal people and indeed Aboriginal people, all Aboriginal people as well with disability, and to honour people in prison with disabilities. Unfortunately, I wasn't able this year to get any content at all to do with prisoners. And I think that this topic is very, very sadly neglected. And I will certainly try, if I'm still around, which I should be, to bring you some of that content next year. Thanks very much. And stay tuned for the next show. And it's goodbye from Marissa and
Will.
Okay, bye. Stay strong and take care of each other.